Hello, welcome to the Photo Show. Yep, we're here to discuss the week's photo news. Two shows in 2 weeks, unheard of. And there'll definitely be one next week as well. Incredible. If next week's, it is 17th, there'll definitely be one next week as well. So that seems brilliant. Hope you had a great week. We've had some reviews. Thank you to those people who've bothered to take the time to give us some reviews. It makes a massive difference to positioning iTunes. We're not pushing up yet. We're not the biggest show on the network, not by a long way. I think we only do about 6,000 a week. But there have been great reviews. Thanks so much. Hobbs has written, well worth a listen. Ewan reads through the news and product info. His knowledgeable style, the Q&A section is dependable and reflects Ewan's numerous years as a pro photographer. Some say he started his career with a plate camera. I know where you live, mate. I don't think he looks quite that old. Okay, you redeemed it. Chris says, thanks, you and Ian, for bringing back the photo show in 2016. This is a great show for everyone with a photography interest, whether absolute beginner or experienced pro. The news, tips and gear reviews provide something for everyone. Photos different to other British Tech Network shows like the Mac and the Big Show in that Ewan hosts it alone rather than with a panel. But this works well and has him share his own professional experience and thoughts. If you haven't listened yet, you should add this to your podcast feed today. And Cruxto says, great to hear you're back with the photo show, Ewan. Always good to hear your thoughts on all areas of photography and the hints and tips you give are brilliant. Keep them coming. And there's several more there as well, which I'm going to read out next week because there's quite a lot of, I didn't realise you guys were putting them in. Please, please, please keep going with the reviews because, as I say, it does make a massive difference to us in iTunes and I really appreciate it. So without further ado, let's go for the news. So news then, starting us off, of course, the Fantasy Photo League is now a week older. January's closed, it's gone, Lines was done. Hannah Cousins has written in some wonderful comments, and I've written some comments as well for some of the people that are there. And I think, I've looked in the Slack room, they've all been received well by the people, saying that they're constructive comments. A lot of learning points for a lot of people, and some really great images. Quite a few of them as well are people who've nearly cracked it and nearly got a decent image. They've just got a few things that haven't quite worked out. But it's an egalitarian system because I give you a score and Hannah gives you a score and we write comments. But then everyone who's in the competition gets 3 votes for other images other than their own to try and promote them. So the cream should rise to the top. If you'd like to join in, it's dead simple. Just send me an email to britishtechnetwork@gmail.com. I'll give that again at the end of the podcast. And you're in. That's it. You can get shooting. February's topic is a tough one. It's self. But you're not allowed to shoot a picture of yourself. And you're also not allowed to shoot a picture of anyone else that could perhaps identify who you are. Anything that quintessentially is you and could identify you, it means that you're exempt from the competition. It's a completely anonymous competition. No one's allowed to talk about their comments or anything like that or which photo they posted or anything until the end of the year. And then it'll all become apparent. But it's well worth doing because at the end of the year, you could win a DSLR. Yep, there we go. So, Fantasy Photo League, send us an email, we'll get you sorted. First bit of news then is sad. Lino Manfrotto has died. Now, you won't know Lino, but you'll remember Manfrotto, I'm sure. My first ever tripod that I bought was a Manfrotto tripod. He was a photojournalist who worked in his hometown of Bassano del Grappa in Italy. And he was he worked for local newspapers and stuff like that. And he was never happy with the tripods and attachments and that kind of stuff that he got to buy. So he decided to design his own stands and booms and that kind of stuff. And he made loads of telescopic rods and stuff in his garage. And then he partnered up with a mechanical engineer called Gilberto Bertocchio. And the Manfrotto brand was launched. And they put their first tripod out in 1974. He's lived to a ripe old age there at 80. He's not been part of Manfrotto for quite a while. But I think the design ethic still shows through in those. It's owned by a company called VTech, who make very cheap tripods as well as the Manfrotto range and the Gitzo range and all that kind of stuff. But I do like Manfrotto stuff. I've always bought Manfrotto tripods. I've never bought anything else. And I will continue to until they make something that's crap because they haven't made anything yet. There you go. This is the Sigma 85mm 1.4 Art lens. We reported on this the other week and said it's kind of there, but it's the price was very, very keen in comparison to the ones that are out in the same market area. Well, it's won an award by DxOMark. They have given it the highest score that they've ever given for a lens. It's earned a score of 50, which has beaten a trio of highly regarded, in quotes, Zeiss lenses. Now, the difference is this costs £1,200, and it's way cheaper than the Zeiss Otus, which is the equivalent lens, which is £4,000, which is a significant difference. And they're dollars, sorry, not pounds. There's loads of cheaper lenses out there with 85mm, Ian's put in the dock, and he's dead right. The thing that you're paying for here is the 1.4, most definitely, because that open aperture really starts to bump the price of lenses up. A, because it's desirable, and B, its cost of manufacturing goes up as well. Are you going to get a great deal of difference from a 1.4 to a 2.8? Because you can get yourself an 85mm 2.8 for probably about a third of the price. So you've got to really start thinking about whether you're going to utilise that extra depth of field that you're going to have. I don't think I would get anything from that. It would help maybe in some dark environments, helping me improve my exposure. But then I'm starting to think about very carefully where I'm focusing on stuff, more than I would do now with 2.8, or certainly if I go up to f4 or something like that. If it's worth the extra money to you, then fine, but you're talking about two-thirds more. So you could be down about £400 rather than £1,200. But well done, Sigma. Sigma have been making good quality glass for a long time. They always made decent stuff, but there was always something about them that I never really, you know, I bought one or two Sigma lenses in my time, but I tended to stick with Canon glass because it was just, I knew the quality was there. But now I would say you probably can't tell the difference. Muller's put in the chat room, nothing wrong with a Sigma lens, totally right. Adam's put, blimey, I never thought I'd see a Sigma lens beating a Zeiss lens, let alone three of them. Wouldn't use it personally, but I know many others would. I've had a Sigma lens, I had the 12-24mm, and I have to say, I really rated it. It was a great lens, I used it for loads and loads and loads of stuff. So, you know, I think a bit of snobbery coming in there. Manufacturing quality's changed a lot in the last 20 years, most definitely so. Clearly, that review says that this is worth a buy. There's the lens specs there and the marks that it scored. The Zeiss lens did pretty well. It was only two marks behind it, but well done. Tamron SP 85mm lens didn't do so bad either, so that's okay. Well done. And that's only 750 quid. Well done. GoPro's had a bit of a rough year. They've lost $373 million in 2016. Most of that, I think, is probably going to come from development costs on the Hero 5 and the Karma. And the fact, of course, that they had to completely recall all of the Karma helicopters that they pushed out there. And that meant all the little gimbals that went with them as well. I personally have been dead impressed. I've had a Hero 5 now for a few months. I've used it out on site commercially. I really value it. I think it's a great camera. I think it's the best they've made without a doubt. The battery life is at 2 hours, which is significantly better than everything else that they've ever done in the battery life department. The Hero 2 was great for battery life, but this is still better. Specs are brilliant, and it's great. The Hero Session 5, I'm presuming, is equally brilliant, but I haven't got one of those, so I can't tell you whether it is out of personal experience or not. And, of course, the Karma drone. I really want one of these. I think they look really, really good, and I want it because I get that gimbal in the middle as well. And I've got one of those gimbals, the Fairtech ones, and I use it an awful lot, and I'd love to have that with the 5 mounted in it. It would be absolutely superb. I also want someone to make a gimbal that will work with the helicopter. The one that I've got for my line camera. But bad luck GoPro, but I really feel that they're going to come back. I hope they will. They say they've got the Hero 6 coming out in 2017, so you haven't got a 2-year wait. That'll be great. And hopefully they'll improve yet again. Comment from Ian in the doc here, he said, if GoPro dug themselves into a bit of a niche, there are other GoPro products out there that are cheaper. Yeah, I think they have. I think that if you really want something that's just if you want a clone copy that just shoots 1080p video, then there's tons that are out there for 35 quid that'll do a just fine job. There won't be a problem. If you want the time-lapse functionality, the burst mode, the pro vis, the pro wide stuff, then you're never going to get that from anything else that's cheaper. That's where GoPro have set themselves apart. And the telemetry now with the GPS built in, that's really, really kind of cool when you start using that in their editing software. I think there's still a place for GoPro, most definitely, for people that want to pay for good quality. If you're going to buy a cheap piece of crap off eBay, then fine, but don't complain when it doesn't do what you want. But if it's just shooting 1080p video at your kid's party, or you're throwing it to the kids to take in the pool, then fair enough. Oh, Tyra Banks is in hot water. She could climb into hot water with me. Oh, there's no question of that. Basically, what's happened is she's been posting photos of models on her Instagram account, and she hasn't had permission from the from the photographers. She also hasn't given them a credit for the images that she's shown on her her Instagram page. And everyone's up in arms over it. What she effectively was doing was she became obsessed with the idea of whether models could be top flight models if they had freckles. So she tweeted out loads of examples of models that she'd found on the internet who did have freckles, who had great looks and that kind of stuff. Loads of complaints sprung up because every photographer that saw it said, oh, hang on, you can't do that because you're Tyra Banks. So, you know, you should know better about image rights and that kind of stuff. And they've got upset. And she's taken them down, which is fine because she's been asked to take them down, so she's taken them down. But everyone wants blood because of what she's done. And I've got to say, for Christ's sake, get over yourself. If you stick it online, it's no longer yours. Plain and simple. It gets out and goes everywhere. And I don't think that she's done anything more than I do when I do the little banner images that go on the shows. I find an image on Google. I try and buy stuff that, or get stuff off that's got Creative Commons on it as well. I know she hasn't done that, but she's highlighting a point. She's not making any money from doing that tweet. I don't have a problem with it. I'm sorry, but my view is I'm a professional photographer. I sell images for a living, but that is not stealing them if you just stick them on your Instagram account as examples of something that you're becoming obsessed with. She needs to go and get the obsession with freckles sorted out. That would be far more productive. But photographers, grow up. No sympathies here, I'm afraid. These three guys are pretty special. They are the people who invented the digital camera. And they've got a Queen's Award for it, which is brilliant. Well done, chaps. They are Dr. Mike Tomsett, who's a Brit, Professor Nobukazu Teranishi, who's from Norfolk. No, sorry, who's Japanese, my mistake. And Professor Eric Fossum, who's a US scientist. And George Smith as well for the US. They created the Digital Imaging Sensor. George Smith and Willard Boyd, who's now deceased, had the original idea for a CCD sensor in Bell Labs in 1969. But it was their colleague, Tomsett on the left, who saw the potential of the technology on the imaging. Someone in the chat room's asking whether that's Bush Senior on the left-hand side. Maybe not. In 1980, Professor Teranishi developed the pinned photodiode, the PPD sensor, a more efficient photodiode than previous variants. And all of them have been given fantastic honorees by the Queen Elizabeth Award. Well done, chaps. Totally deserved. Have you got your copy of CS6? Adobe Creative CX6. Did anyone buy that? Because I didn't. I had CS5 and CS4, and I miss CS6 completely. Well, if you have, then it's officially been retired by Adobe. There is no longer any support that you're available for it, and I'm sorry, but you can't have it. The only way you can get Adobe now is through the Creative Cloud. They're all gone. The hard disks, the hacking, the piracy, the download codes from newsgroups, all done and dusted. You've got to buy Creative Cloud. At the moment, there's been an increase in price, and there's a few people been whinging to me about, oh, it's gone up, Photoshop's gone up to £10.10 a month. You're like, hang on. So me, Jake and Muller went up to the Apple store today up in Solihull. You spent more than that on two cup of coffee and two teas.
Well,
nothing, absolutely nothing. £10.10 is not worth it. You couldn't buy two beers in London for that. It's worth every single penny. And you look at all the other applications doing the same kind of stuff, I think it's brilliant. I had a go with Felix as well yesterday. I wasn't a master of it, not by any stretch of the imagination, but I got an image out fairly quickly. It's well worth it. Doc recommended that on the Mac show. Felix is the new software, and it's free for everyone who's a Creative Cloud subscriber. So it's right up there with the Lightroom stuff. And it's very powerful. I was clearly a beginner when I had a go at using it. I need to sit and have a read and watch some tutorials and get into it. But very powerful. Really, really enjoyed it. Well worth the money. CS6 is gone. Get over it. Get over it. It's done. Can't help yourself. Time for the gear. Adam's in the chat room, he's saying, I don't fully mind the price increase of Creative Cloud, but I do feel that the 63% increase for students is a bit unfair. I have Photoshop, but might have a try at Affinity Photo Designer from Corel. It's not worth the money, mate. It's not worth the money. The amount you're paying there, that's half of it, of the total year's subscription, and it does virtually nothing in comparison. It's far worse. I don't like it at all. I would not put my money into that. I'd rather put £100 into, or £120 now, into Photoshop. Adam thought the one on the right was Tom Baker. Very good. Well done, mate. This is the Adorama. It is a Canon radio-controlled TTL flash head and hot shoe flash as well as. It claims that the Orlit Rovelite RT610 TTL wireless moonlight with built-in RT systems is the first of its kind. It's also launched the Orlit TR611C and TR612N TTL transceivers. Blimey, that's catchy. Which allow TTL control of the through the lens, by the way, if you're not aware what TTL means, with Canon and Nikon DSLRs. There is a Rovelite, which is a 600-watt head. That's this thing here, which is pretty powerful. I've got some 300-watt heads, and they're brilliant. The Adorama claims it's 450 full-power flashes. At one go. Longest recycle time is 2.5 seconds if you discharge the whole thing on full power. Output settings down to 1/256th of a second and 1/3 EV stops. Claim variance of only 150 Kelvin across the output range. With this, you can clear, I'm reading the stats, can't you? This is the boring bit of the podcast. Fast forward here, put it on two speed. A standard colour temperature of 5,500 Kelvin. No prices on them. But there you go. One of the other things it's got is this this Speedlight head flash. Oh, I've got prices, sorry. The Orlit head is $700. Ouch. The Speedlight is $169. Now, that is massively good, because if that's a decent flash, that's about a quarter of the price of the Canon one. And the transceivers are for Nikon and Canon are $70, which is excellent. That's that little bit down there at the bottom there with the green readout and that kind of stuff. That's not bad at all. $70 is a good old price for that. I'm quite impressed. The heads, 600 watts, I suppose. That's actually pretty good. Yeah, okay. That's good. Yeah, well done. I like that. Lexar have released a 512 gigabyte C card, compact flash card. That's all right, Alexa, I can edit. And they've announced that they've doubled a quarter of their 3,500 speed flash cards. Write speeds of up to 445 megabits a second, and the price of it is the best bit. Brexit bendover comes good. $1,700 if you want one of these, or in Britain, it's 1,732 quid. You bastards. You do know that the Brexit rate's less than that, don't you? Muller's put in the chat room, Alexa does more editing than you and does, that's true. Designed for movie makers, especially super high frame rates, 4K and RAW formats, and read-write speeds of 525 megabits per second. I'm a bit in two minds here whether they've shot their bolt a bit on CF cards, because a lot of people now are using external recording media. So they're using Thunderbolt compatible stuff, or they're using interchangeable drive stuff. I've got some Archos stuff here, look. The Atomos cards. The Atomos screens are brilliant if you want to do external recording to bulk. These are all 512 gigabyte cards, and I've got four of them that I can carry around in less than a couple of centimetres. There you go. There's two cards right there. They just fit into a standard SD card reader, both into your Thunderbolt thing, and that's it. You're off. Not SD card reader, what I'm talking about. SSD reader for SATA. Every movie maker that I've seen of late where there's been a bit of background image on the TV or that kind of thing, they've all been using external Atomos drives. None of them have been going for this kind of stuff. So I think the age of the compact flash card could be drawing to a very close end. Most definitely. Honor has released a whole new style of bag. I can't believe Ian's put I've got a bag fetish, right? I have a real problem with bags. I buy bags galore. I've got bags galore stored here at the studio, and I keep buying bags because it's my problem. It's like shoes, all right, for women. I buy bags. Small bags and a wrist strap aimed at compact system users. So there's the saving grace, because they won't be for me. That's all right, Ian. Fair enough then. The Bond Street is an upright backpack for single body and upright back for single body and couple of lenses, three or four lenses perhaps, with a locking clasp. That's it there, and it's $219. Ouch. Ouch, that's a lot of money. This thing is the same kind of thing in canvas. That's the Beacon, I think. And it's, that's the Kia. No, oh, I don't know which one that is now. Never mind. They've got an interesting one. If I fast forward, this one is shaped like a tripod bag. This is the Beacon. It's shaped like a tripod case, and it features a pair of zip-up compartments on the fronts for your lenses. And there's three dividers in the bag that you can move it around. And that's how it opens up. And I think that's bloody brilliant. I think it's a great way of carrying stuff around. Would I buy it? No, because I don't need it. And I've got camera bags if I need to take it out. But I thought that was at least lateral thinking. Well done. And the Kyoto wrist strap, here it is. Well, it's just a bit of leather. And it's $50. Ouch. Pretty expensive. Adam's got the same problem as me. Please don't let it be. I can't justify another bag. I've got a Billingham recent. Oh, you lucky bastard. I haven't got a Billingham. I've never bought a Billingham. I've got to say, on my bucket list is to own a Billingham camera bag that I'll put in a cupboard and I'll never use. And the wife will probably use it for going on holiday as a weekend bag or something to a hen party with the girls in Prague or something like that. I don't know. It won't be me, though. Definitely not. Samyang have released a whole pile of lenses. This is the last bit of the news for gear. It's the X-EEN cinema lineup. X-E-E-E-N. There's eight lenses total in the lineup. The PL, the EF, the F, the E, and the Micro Four Thirds mounts are all available. Metric and Imperial units as well, if you're still in the past. X-coating technology, 11 aperture blades, focus ring, iris gearing. Samyang has said that the lens are suitable for 4K or greater, including low light stuff, and it launches on the 7th of March. And the lens, it's a cine lens, do bear that in mind. These are really good quality stuff, but it's $2,365. Samyang makes some great stuff. I've got an 8mm lens by them, big wide angle manual thing that I've got for me Sony, and it's brilliant. It's a really, really good manual lens. These, I'm sure, are absolutely excellent quality, but I think they're a specialist market for people that want them. And I'm not so sure that people are even that worried about the cine lens anymore. They're quite happy with the photographic lenses. The quality's more than good enough. We'll see how they go. But it's not for me, I'm afraid. Not for me. That was the gear. We only had four stories this week because we had six stories in the news. So here we go then. It's time for your questions. If you've got a question, then you can send it to us at britishtechnetwork@gmail.com. Just mark the title, Photo Show Question. I think there's actually a link you can click on the website that will generate the email for you. And send it through. And we will do our best to get it answered. Okay? We've had two questions this week. We have got a third. That's not true. I've got a third which I need to find. But I'll do that while we're doing the next one. I'll just pause it there because I can edit. So, first question then is from Martin. It says, great to have the photo show making. Martin. I'm shooting some great landscapes at the moment when I'm away. Are there any massive don'ts and do's for landscape work and things that I definitely must do? Ian's answered this one because if you don't know, Ian Lewis is at Ian Lewis, Ian L. Lewis on Twitter, I think. Fantastic landscape photographer, really, really good guy down in Cornwall. Follow him and get tons and tons of great advice and tips. He said, Ian's comments here, use a tripod. I think that's probably an obvious one, but it's interesting why he said it. He said, use the tripod to slow you down. And he said, the other thing is to make sure that it makes you think about your composition before you get the tripod out and set it up. And one of the things that he's instilled to Martin, I think this is an absolutely fantastic tip, is don't keep the camera on the tripod. So put the tripod down, then move around with the camera till you find the framing that you want, and then go back and get the tripod and set the tripod down. He says that what that's avoiding is the tendency to dump the tripod and shoot from the first place where you first drop the tripod down. I think that's a fantastic tip. I'm going to use that myself, actually, when I get out on site. I'm going to take the camera off, get where I want to go, and then put stuff down for longer exposures. Make sure when you frame the image that you place something on the third, don't have your horizon line bang in the middle. I don't know if I totally agree with that one. I think there are some shots where you've got, and I did crop one of Ian's earlier this year with a guy walking with a surfboard, and I think it improved the crop because the horizon was in the middle. But generally speaking, he's probably right. Find some foreground interest as well and make sure you show that. Make sure you've got sharpness from front to back where you possibly can, and it's important that the foreground is sharp. It always, it doesn't matter about the lighthouse that's 2 miles away if it starts to look like it's going soft. So make sure you've got your detail in good focus and nice and crisp before you go for anything else. Look for landscapes within the landscape, the picture within a picture. It's not all wide angle vistas when you want to start showing stuff. I think that's a good thing with the Ansel Adams stuff, because if you look at them, you know, you've got this great open Grand Canyon picture, but there's always something of interest, you know, a river running through the base of the canyon, or a line of trees, or the framing of a mountain or something in the distance that looks good. It's a great point. Make sure horizons and verticals are straight, and if you shoot in bright skies, shoot to underexpose rather than overexpose. Easier to lift in post than to try and recover something that's blown out. A definite pro tip from me as well. Whenever you shoot anything outside, always underexpose, especially if you're in snow and stuff like that, deliberately underexpose and then bring it up, because otherwise, once it's blown out, when it's gone, it's gone. Thanks, Ian. Great tips, mate. And I hope that helps, Martin. Next one, hi you, and great to have the photo show making an appearance again, even though it's semi-regular. This is from Simon. My question is, I'd like to start putting together a lighting rig. What's the best thing to start with? You haven't put in there what you're actually lighting. I mean, that's going to be your first question. So if you're talking about you want to light large areas, then you're going to go for completely different lights than you are with a small studio. You haven't said whether you want continuous lighting or flash lighting, a strobe lighting. So that's going to make a big difference to you, Simon. If you're looking for a small lighting setup for a home studio, say something the size of a bedroom, my preference is always to have one single source of light if you're shooting people, and then bounce the light round elsewhere. If you've got a second light, it's useful to have a second light to create a halo on a backdrop or something like that. But generally, the light that I use for the person is just one. If I want to lift one side of the face, say I've got the light over here and I want it to come across, and I've got a lot of shadow on the right-hand side of the face, just to the right, I might put a reflector just to bounce some of the light back in, just to soften it. But I wouldn't put a second strobe there or anything like that. People around, objects are generally around, they're three-dimensional. One source of light helps to show three dimensions. Two heads shouldn't cost you more than about 400 quid. You could get two decent flash heads and some Interfit stuff maybe off Wex, something like that. 400 quid will do you a lot, and then get yourself a remote trigger system. That'll cost you between 20 and 50 quid, and you're up and running. You'll have a great flash unit. And then the other thing is to think about getting creative. You know, okay, I haven't got a softbox. Okay, that's fine. So use an umbrella that you've got around to bounce light if you've got an umbrella at home, a light-coloured one, a golf umbrella that's white and blue. Use that to create different colours and shades. Start stretching stuff across the flash that'll help diffuse it. You can get yourself like shower caps. If you've got a semi-translucent shower cap, a white one, that'll stretch over a lot of shower heads, It'll stretch over a lot of lighting hoods, and it'll give you the same kind of effect. You haven't got to worry. Get creative. You don't have to spend a lot of money. I was doing this kind of stuff with no money when I was a student, just trying to make stuff happen. Stretch materials over things, create a snoot by actually pulling the material forward and creating a halo from it. It's dead easy to do. If you want continuous lighting, you're talking about spending a little bit more money probably to get high power stuff. Watch for the rating on that as well, so the size of bulbs that you can put in, because you can increase the size of bulbs in some of them. And also, if you want really good bright continuous lighting, you're probably going to have to put in halogens, and halogens get mooey warm. And if you're into LEDs, then the books are going to start rolling in, I'm afraid. So let's have a think. But if you want something for the home, just a little small studio the size of a bedroom, then a couple of flash heads will do you the power of good. Get into those. And the last question. It's my mum's anniversary tomorrow, and I've got a slideshow in a .mov format that I'd like to send to people on Facebook, but it's 352 megabytes. How can I make it smaller so people can download it without wiping out their allowances on their mobiles? First thing then, that was from Martin. First thing then is to change the size of it. So use something like Handbrake. It's available in Windows and for Mac, and that'll change it into a different size format. It'll recode it into M4V, but that'll upload straight away to somewhere like YouTube or Facebook. That won't be a problem. The other thing to do, which I think is probably a quick one, is to stick it on YouTube. And then from YouTube, if they're out on their mobile, that should automatically downsize it depending on the connection that they've got, or they could pick their reduced resolution to watch it. So that'll kind of redo the recoding for it for you, in inverted commas, if you like. And then you can even do it private, so you just send out the link to the people, and only if you've got that link can those people see it. So you can restrict it to your Facebook profile dead easy. It doesn't have to be open to the world on YouTube. I do an awful lot for companies with YouTube, and they'll go, oh yeah, but we can't, you know, what about the link? Unless you've got the link, if you've marked it as private, unless you've got the link, you can't watch it. Okay, so it's not listed, so always worth doing. If you've got a question, send it to us at britishtechnetwork@gmail.com and we'll get it answered for you as best we can. Or we'll find someone like Ian who can, who's brilliant. He's awesome. There you go. If you want to join the Fantasy Photo League, then it's dead easy. All you got to do is send us an email to britishtechnetwork@gmail.com and we'll get you enrolled in it and you can start shooting photos. And you're going to go, oh, I've missed January. What am I going to do? Doesn't matter. That's fine. There's loads and loads of images to go through for the rest of the year. And as more people join, it means there's more votes available for people to score points. So what you scored in January could be absolutely infinitesimal by the time that we hit December. If we had 1,000 people turn up to just do December, then we blow the rest of the year out of the water. So that's all you got to think about. If you've got a story, send it to us as well. Anything that you think might go well in the doc, then send it to the same email address. Great. Right, my name's Ewan Rankin. Get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter. We'll be back again next Friday with the photo show as normal, 17th, 2 p.m. We'll be here. Definitely. That's not going to change. Brilliant. See you then. Thanks for listening.